This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, your Q, presented by Premier Insurance Group. Here is Shannon Sebastian with your Q on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon, everybody. And it's kind of a dark, dismal Thursday out there. It was really windy on my way over, but anyway, the outside air smells awesome, and I love to be outside when I get the chance because I'm usually inside all day, every day, right now these days. So, but welcome to another episode of Your Q, where we're celebrating, uplifting, and educating. And today's kind of been a show I've been looking forward to for a while, and I just want to share a little bit on this because November is Alzheimer's Awareness Month. And this is really special to me because my mother-in-law was affected by this. And it's a long road to go through for people. And so I wanted to have some knowledgeable and friendly people in the studio with me today to just kind of talk about this and what it is and how we coped and how we got through it and how our loved ones are. And again, this is in honor of my mother-in-law, Joanne Sebastian. She was just a wonderful woman, and I think back, you know, and all the stories that I hear about her in her youth and through all her years about how vibrant she was, and she was a popular person, a cheerleader in school, and she loved dancing, and she was really active with the Mercy Auxiliary and the Moose Lodge, and she was married for a very, very long time to my father-in-law, Dean Sebastian, and they had a wonderful marriage and danced many years at the Moose, and she was a wonderful mother, mother-in-law, grandmother, sister to her sisters, and honestly an amazing daughter-in-law because she took care of not only her mother but also her mother-in-law. And so when it came for her time to be, you know, in need, that's when it's like she needs to be cared for equitably, as beautifully and wonderful as she'd cared for her parental unit. So I was blessed to have her in my life, and I am forever grateful for every day I was blessed to have her. And, you know, I just always think back that she started out as my boyfriend's mother, but she ended up as one of my, now I'm going to cry, best, dearest, and most treasured people in my life. So in her honor today, we're going to get this message out, because if we can help even one person, this show is so worth it. I mean, 1 hour. Mm-hmm. And so I am blessed to have in the studio with me today Sarah Calvert, who is the executive director of Brookdale Assisted Living and Memory Care Facility.
Yes.
That's the important part for us. So thank you and for coming and taking some time out of your day to be here, Sarah. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, and she's got all the knowledge and goods here. And then Carol Johnstone, who is just the kindest, most beautiful soul. If you don't know her, she's amazing. I love her. And she's also had parental units who have gone through this. And so we have actually shared things and hugged and helped each other through it from time to time. So I thought how fitting for her to be here, because we've all walked a mile in these shoes. Sarah's had family members as well. So you have three people in this room who've had loved ones go through this and experience this, and so we're just going to share a little bit about what we know about it. So welcome, ladies. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. So, Sarah, I don't know if you want to touch on it just a little bit about really what Alzheimer's or like a dementia diagnosis is. Like, some people have different ideas of what that is, or, oh, I forgot something. And that's it, one time.
Right. So a lot of people will say, oh, my loved one has dementia. They don't have Alzheimer's. But what they forget is dementia is just a word that describes a cluster of symptoms. So like if you have cancer, you have a form of it, correct? Like you don't just, if someone told you they have cancer, you ask them what kind of cancer they have. Same with dementia, you have a form of it. But, and there's like 80 plus forms, and it's hard to get an accurate diagnosis of that. So oftentimes Alzheimer's is a diagnosis that's given. It's the leading form of dementia. But there's so many different kinds, and there's such a stigma around it. People are so scared to get it, or if they're frustrated with their loved one because they're, you know, you're retired and you're with them all the time and they've forgotten something, mm-hmm. you're terrified that they might have dementia when in fact they don't. They could have an infection. They could just, I mean, I forget stuff too, you know, and maybe,
oh, me too.
You know,
we talked about that before the show. It's like, ooh.
Yeah. So I think, it's, you don't be scared that you might have it. If you have it, you know, there's lots of avenues, lots of things that can help you, but, just kind of pay attention to what's going on and then talk to a medical professional and really demand an answer, you know, don't just go in.
Yeah, I think a diagnosis mm-hmm. is really important, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's a very difficult thing to get.
Yeah, and it absolutely can be, you know, really frustrating for the person and for the family. It seems like when I have clients who've come in and we've talked about stuff like this, it seems like there's like a, like it's almost an embarrassment if somebody feels like they have it and that stigma with it. And I sure wish we could get that drop so we could get people into the doctor sooner.
I think that's the biggest hindrance. I mean, obviously, before I worked in assisted living and didn't take care of people with dementia or Alzheimer's until I went to Brookdale. It wasn't Brookdale at the time, but when I went there, and I had really not that much education about it. And a lot of people just think they're crazy or that it's contagious or you're going to get it. And that's not the truth. But to get that out there that it's, you're not alone, you're not by yourself. This is a very common thing to have. Doesn't mean that you're crazy. You just are losing your brain cells and your memory on how to function to do certain things. So,
I mean, it is a disease and people don't really look at it that way. It's not, that's the stigma thing is it's not a, like you said, cancer earlier, and you use that as an example, people would be like, oh, that's too bad, you know, or something like that. But it's like, oh, they have cancer. But when it's like, oh, they have Alzheimer's, then all of a sudden people get weird about it.
They get weird or they're trying to like we have had residents who come in and they're, you know, they're very high functioning. They're able to do stuff, but they don't remember certain things that they drive and they get lost. They're there for their safety. And their friends think, oh, no, they shouldn't be here. They don't have dementia. They're fine. And then they, because they're afraid to address it. Like they're, and a lot of people, when they get this disease, a lot of family members, they lose their friends. Their friends don't want to be around it. They want to talk about it. They're scared they're going to get it too. They don't know what to say. So it's a very isolating disease and it's a lonely disease.
Yes. And it can be really frightening for people that are, you know, experiencing that too. You know, they don't understand or may not have a full understanding of what Alzheimer's is. And to, you know, start forgetting all these things and not remember things, it's frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And legitimately, that I think that fright or that fear is understandable, but it's like, don't let that outweigh your decision to seek help, because it's like sometimes, not that there's a cure for it yet, but they are making headway and they are coming out with different things that can stave it off or longer or slow the progression, or there are certain things out there that may or may not work for somebody. And it's like that early detection, just like cancer, again, going back to that, or breast, you know, catching something early, no matter what disease it is always beneficial. And so I definitely encourage people to don't be ashamed to say, you know, how do I go about finding out, or can I have the test at least to get a baseline?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a baseline would be really important for somebody down the road that then the doctor can watch you for and pay attention to. And it's like, and know that you're an ally and not somebody that's trying to do something wrong.
I have a couple of close friends who, you know, they're in their 60s, so they're not old, but they have, I mean, that's not old. So there's tests that you can do, like a mini mental exam. You can do the Slums test, and I'm going to do it the next time I go visit with them just because they want to know. And I'm like, I know you're fine, but I'll do it with you. And then it's not an accurate diagnosis, but if, let's say, I did that with my mom and I had concerns, then I could give it to her doctor and be like, listen, I want you to check this out for her. And so I want to be tested as soon as I can be. I'm always checking,
right?
You know, and then I'm going to get in a clinical trial and I'm going to do whatever I can.
Oh gosh, and to have a plan, I think that's really important too. You know, fear is a bad thing, but if you have a plan of action to stick to and areas to explore, it helps alleviate some of the anxiety too.
And I think, you know, to find out before there's an incident or an accident, like where you guys brought up the the driving and getting lost. Well, it could also be driving and forgetting about looking at traffic signals or something like that.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, you know,
which
you
is
don't
me
want to put
half
somebody
the time.
Else in. know, mean, we're telling on ourselves a lot today, but it's like, but you know, I mean, I do think there is that stigma around it, and that people have, and it's embarrassing or it's this or that, but it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. And your family's not going to love you one iota less for having that diagnosis. I mean, we had our mother-in-law, my mother-in-law, Brookdale, and
she's
the
best.
I loved my visits.
Yeah.
You know, I loved my visits. And I love to hear the reports from staff because, you know, it's, I'll get into that one later because that's one of my coping mechanisms was how I dealt with it. But, you know, I mean, there's new things to explore about somebody also when they have this diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
so true.
As they go through it and they're transitioning, there's different parts of their personality that come to the forefront, good, bad, and indifferent. Not all good.
So true.
Right. So my dad's dad lived at Brookdale for quite a while. And I mean, when he moved in, my dad had been there. He comes all, you know, he was at Brookdale a lot. And it was still, I still remember the day we moved my grandpa, and my dad was very emotional about it. And at first I was like, come on, dad, you know, I'm here, I'm going to take care of him. But then I got it. You're leaving your loved one. One of the most important things in your life with virtually strangers. But my dad had shared with me later, because he came and saw my grandpa a lot. My dad was the fifth of 10 children. My grandpa's a great grandpa. I have great memories of him, but he worked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad told me that he felt that he got to know his father and was closer to him the time that he was there than prior in all the years that he was alive. And I found that to be very interesting.
I truthfully believe that because I feel like it was an extremely bonding experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like we already were, but I think it took it to another level. And honestly, it was also an extra level of bonding for me with my husband because he saw me in a different light, really being you know, a helpful caretaker for his mother. And he's just like, I don't know how you do some of the things you do, but if I could love you any more for what you're doing, I do, you know. And
yes.
So it was bonding in that aspect. And even my sister-in-law, because we had to communicate so much all the time because she lives out of town, that it was like that was also bonding because you're going through something together,
right?
That it can be a bonding and bring people closer. And it can also do the exact polar opposite, because Lord knows not everybody's going to share your ideals, your treatment method, or whatever you're deciding to do. So I mean, it can be bonding, and it can also tear families apart.
I think it's when it tears family apart, so a lot of times it's we're all going through, everyone is grieving, and they handle that grief differently.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I think that a lot of times their anger is their guilt because they can't be there and they can't take care of them the right way, or they're, you know.
I think that's very true. Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Or just that you're not maybe that person that particular person connects with.
Yeah.
It's easy. You know, there are different personalities and different temperaments or different whatever, and maybe they just need more of one thing or another. Maybe they need more tough love, or maybe they need more of the coddling type of love, you know. I mean, and so whoever they're going to get that from, they might gravitate that way. So, it's so hard to keep the emotions out of it,
which is so funny because when my mom's mom lived there, she we were very close. I mean, she has a lot of grandkids, and my brother and I always tell everyone that we always would tell her we're her favorite. And of course, when we were with her, we were. But you know, when she was there, the dementia that she had caused her to be kind of mean or a little delusional. She didn't have a filter. And so, you know, she would always be like, you're so tough and you're so bossy and so mean to me. And I wasn't, you know, coddling her enough. And I'm like, Grandma, you're fine. Like, come on. I mean, we took very good care of her, but she wanted someone who was going to, you know, basically baby her,
because
that's what she liked. She liked to be the center of attention, and she wanted everyone to coddle and hug her. And so there were caregivers there that did fantastic and did that with her.
Oh, yeah. So. You have terrific people working with you. You do.
You absolutely do. Well, we're already at our first break,
oh,
everybody.
Wow.
So
we
have to stop
lot.
For a moment, but we'll be right back. This is Shannon Sebastian on your Local Talk News Radio, 1240 KQEN. Back in just a moment.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
There is no surprise that we're just in here chatting again. I know, I told him this happens to me every time. So welcome back to your queue. Shannon Sebastian here with Sarah Calvert from Brookdale and Carol Johnstone in the office, in the studio, whatever we want to call this.
Say it's our office.
It'll be like the radio office. So when we left, we had talked about, you know, the stigma and encouraging people to go ahead and go in and things like that. But one of the things I think I want to talk about with you, because we've all had, like I said, all had family members go through this, is it might be helpful to some of the listeners out there to see how we kind of picked up on maybe each of our family members might, something might have been off, because everybody's story is different. It's not always, oh, I forgot this one thing or this happened. Everybody kind of picks up on it differently. So Carol, you want to start off like what you noticed, or Sarah, whoever.
I care to go. I talk a lot.
I think that the biggest notifier for our family was that my mom started getting more and more paranoid and anxious and distrustful of people and things around her. She started losing things and thinking that people were stealing from her. There were a couple of incidents where she actually called the police saying that someone had broken into her house to take things when she had given them away to friends and that sort of thing. So that was a big thing. And then she would go on a walk and not come home for a very long time, and I would get off work and go find her. And she didn't say it, but you could tell that she was confused about where she was and didn't know how to get back home. So those little things. And it was really embarrassing for her, too. She didn't know what was going on. She was very fearful about that, too. And it caused more confusion and more paranoia as well.
Yeah, I think the fear about not knowing what's happening to you or why you don't remember, like, perpetuates the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you cover up and you hide things because you don't want people to know because you're so scared.
Yes. Right. That's so true. And then hiding things. She would hide things because she thought that people were stealing from her. And she would put things in the oddest places, like things that shouldn't go in the refrigerator were in the refrigerator. And then things that were in the refrigerator were under the bed, that sort of thing. And so it was really noticeable to me and to my father initially. Mm-hmm. But for her, you know, she was in survival mode.
Right. Yeah. And very not thinking that there was anything wrong.
Right.
Like what she was experiencing was her reality.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was definitely it. That was her reality, that these things were really happening to her and no one understood or nobody was empathetic to her situation. Yeah.
And that's really scary. Yeah, you know,
it was difficult. Yeah. It was difficult.
That is.
Yeah.
Well, for my grandma, I know, like, after my grandfather passed away, everyone knew she was forgetting things, and she would always be like, I don't have dementia, because she knew where I worked, and she didn't, you know, I'm not going to go there. If I can't get out, I'm not going to leave, because I always told her if she couldn't get out, she had to stay there. But after my grandfather passed away, we were able to move her into an assisted living facility, because she did need that, but she was still able to, you know, she still had moments. She remembered us. She never forgot who I was, but she had vascular dementia, which is stroke-related. So it caused her to be very delusional. So each time she'd have a little stroke, it would make it worse. And she moved into Bridgewood. They were amazing to let her stay there. And they let her stay longer than they normally would as a favor to me. But she got to the point there where she would be going out in the hall and she'd be yelling. She wouldn't let the caregivers come in. She thought they were trying to kill her. And so I'd have to go sleep on the floor and stay there until we were able to get an opening where she could move in with us. But it was a slow progression, but it got to the point where there was nothing that could be done. She had to go somewhere where she was in a safe place with more staff to take care of her. And then I had one of my best friends lived there because she had a very rare disease, which caused her to have some cognitive impairment. And she moved from her home to our facility, but she told me, I'm going to tell you when I'm ready to go. And one day I went to see her and she's like, it's time. And I'm like, oh, no, it's not time. Like, I didn't want her to move in. It freaked me out. And it was time. And she came and it was kind of like ALS. She wasn't able to speak, but she knew what was going on. And so, I mean, that doesn't happen often where someone says it's time for me to go, but it's normally like my grandma, she couldn't be where she was anymore. Or like your mom, you were seeing that she was, you know,
It's a safety issue.
Yeah, safety. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's often what I find is people are coming with a safety issue. They're waiting, you know, we can take care of them, everything's fine. And then they drive off somewhere or they have some sort of, you know, anger thing where they can't explain to you what's going on. And they get really angry and then the person's afraid for that. Or they're up all night and the person take care of them isn't sleeping or they can't manage, you know, they're incontinent. So
exactly,
it's often, you know, in a crisis.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that for us with my mother-in-law, it was just small little things that we all got a little bit suspicious mm-hmm. about, but mm-hmm. nobody had really maybe mentioned to the other because it was small or minute yeah. kind of. And then once we started talking and comparing notes, then it's like, okay, we have something to maybe worry about here, you know? And then by the time she came to be in Brookdale, you know, she was a smoker, and so she would forget where she had left her lit cigarettes around, and that's a hazard. Oh, that was a hazard yeah. for the house, for my father-in-law, for, you know, and she wanted to drive, so she looked for her keys for 18 months that weren't there and would tell me, look for my keys, they have a surfboard on them and things like that. But there was little things that in hindsight we might have picked up on even earlier, because she loved to do crossword puzzles and puzzles in books mm-hmm. and so that seemed like a sign, you know, they always say that helps with, you know, your mental awareness sure. doing the books and things like that. So I was like, well, she's still doing her puzzles and her books. Well, it wasn't until one day where I believe my sister-in-law opened one and looked at it and said, Shanna, have you looked at these? And none of the words made any sense anywhere in the books, but we would watch her do the yeah. And she'd do it in pen, you know. Uh-huh. Well, you do crosswords in pen. You're got mad skills.
Yeah. You're sharp. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we looked and then we noticed that this she actually wasn't in fact doing that correctly, I should say. She yes. was doing them, but she wasn't doing them correctly. And so then it was just little things like that, and then the attitude started to kick in, uh-huh. maybe a little bit of teenager uh-huh. sassitude.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
So we had some sassitude with her, and then shortly thereafter, it was just asking the same question over and over and over and over and over and over and over, and that is really stressful. It was very stressful for my father-in-law. Mm-hmm. That wears on you, mm-hmm. you know. And so that's when, as a family, we kind of got together and said, okay, let's check out all the options. And between myself and my sister-in-law, we called all the places and then went and toured them. I met Sarah and on a tour, and we just made the decision for both of them what was in both of their mm-hmm. best interest, because, you know, you have two parents. And so that's right. when it was the hard decision to do that, very, very hard, and maybe not super popular with everybody, you know. But we did. We made that decision. And
there's been a study, and I tell people this all the time, where I don't know if the National Institute of Health did it, but the three hardest things you ever go through in life are buying a house, which is very stressful, getting divorced, or moving your loved one into a care facility.
Oh, yes.
And making that decision. It's literally one of the three hardest things that mm-hmm. someone deals with in their life.
I would agree. And, you know, I think that being proactive in, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a loved one that you think is starting to struggle, to even though you haven't made the decision to move them into a memory care facility, to go out there and check it out. There
oh,
are
absolutely.
Facilities in our community, mm-hmm. but there are not always vacancies. And so you have to prepare right. yourself so you can make good decisions when that time comes, when that emergency situation, you know, pops its head up. So you can, you know, that you're putting them someplace that is a quality care facility, one that understands, you know, what you want for your parent as well, too.
And what you guys, you know, you chose Brookdale, which I'm very grateful for, but that might not be a good fit for someone else. You know, like, go and look at those places. Go where you're most yeah. comfortable. I mean, maybe you like a smaller setting, or you like a setting, you know, where someone isn't as upfront as I am with you, but you know, but go and look at them. Don't just go. I have people call me sometimes like, we want to get on a waiting list. I'm like, well, have you been here before? And they're like, no. And I'm like, I'm not putting you on a waiting list yeah. until you've come to see us. You need to be comfortable.
Exactly.
Because, and again, you're putting your most precious belonging, the person mm-hmm. that you're, you know, someone that you love very much, in the hands of strangers.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you go often, and they don't stay strangers long.
Well, that's
true. I would also recommend that if you, it may be hard to originally place them there. So for like our example, mm-hmm. we came in and we toured and there wasn't really an opening at that time, but kind of thought there might be coming up mm-hmm. in a few weeks or whatever. And so the family had decided that I would go see my commitment through because I volunteer at Miss Oregon every year. And then I'd be back in time to do that. Well, right before I left, 2 days before I left, Sarah called and like, there's an opening. And so my sister-in-law, you know, we did everything we could before I left, but she had to be the one to take her. And still to this day, it's like, there's guilt with that. There's guilt because I wouldn't want anybody else to have to do that alone or to shoulder that burden. And that ended up being a big burden, and it happened my second day up there. But when I drove up, I stayed home an extra day just to stay with her before she went in, and then I went a day later than I was supposed to be there. I found myself driving up I-5, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'm gonna drive to Dallas, Oregon, because that's where mom was born. And yeah. I mean, I took off on this tangent of yeah. a journey, an emotional, spiritual God. Thing. Yeah. I don't know what it was. Cried for hours the whole way yeah. up there. And then when I got there, they were like, where are you? And I'm like, I just had to get all the tears mm-hmm. out, because I know when I get here, like, I just need nobody to talk to me about it
yeah.
or I won't survive the week. But, yeah. you know, that guilt that we talked about, it's also knowing that if you can't be there in those big times, it's like, be there for that person via the phone or, you know, however you can. And I think I want to touch on that because we talked about that, Sarah, is it one of the ways to get through is having that person to talk to. So mm-hmm. I think that when we will take a break here and come back in just a moment, and then I want to talk about that. So okay. we'll be right back. This is Your Cue on Local Talk Radio, 1240 KQEN. Be right back.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right. Back with Your Cue, sponsored by Premier Insurance here on News Radio 1240 KQEN. And today we're talking about Alzheimer's and Alzheimer's awareness, since November is Alzheimer's Awareness Month. And we have Sarah Calvert with Brookdale Assisted and Memory Care Living, and Carol Johnston. So thank you ladies again for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank yeah. you.
When we left off, we were starting to talk about and touched on that we would talk about ideas to help cope, or things that we have found that have worked for us to help as much as possible. So anybody want to start us off?
Gosh, I've been to a number of support groups, and they were very helpful. But I think for me, the biggest help was the staff at Brookdale. And then also I have friends that were going through the same thing as well, and talking to them, it, you know, just sharing experiences and learning to be able to laugh, not mm-hmm. at our parents, but to laugh at the situation and to realize that we were going to get through this, mm-hmm. that, and we educated ourselves too. And the Brookdale staff was really good at helping us understand what worked, what didn't work. And that was a huge, huge benefit for me.
Well, like for me, so I kind of have to cope with it on two different levels. You know, I've had to cope with it personally as a family, then, you know, working with it. So my brother and I have very dry sense of humor. And so him and I we can laugh together and joke. And I have really good friends who have zero knowledge in this field, who I can go and do things with and not have to worry about work. But they mm-hmm. I also can vent to them if I need to. And then I also have really close colleagues of mine that I can who've gone through the same thing that I can talk to about, and that, you know, we can just get it out there. I'm the type of person, once I get it out, I can move on. But right. humor, I think, is so important. And then also when I went to Brookdale, I had zero knowledge of dementia. I mean, when we worked in assisted living, we used reality orientation. We didn't know that you're supposed to validate people. And so I kind of took it upon myself to learn as much as I could and try to educate myself as much as I could. But a lot of it was trial and error and, you know, kind of just trying something and it didn't work. And there's a lot of grace in this disease because one of the good things is people forget that you made a mistake sometimes. Like, you know, I tried the wrong approach, but I think that support groups are very good. I don't think that support groups are for everyone, but I think if you can find the right support group that works for you, I mean, we did facilitate a support group for a very long time, and unfortunately, with COVID, we haven't been able to do that. But we've done some Zoom support groups for, like, spouses, because, I mean, you know, none of us have had a spouse with this disease, right?
No.
So I think that spouses are experiencing it in a different way than we have. And, you know, as, and I mean, it's not even my parents. I mean, I don't even want to think about that. It's been my grandparents and friends. So you guys, it's been your parents. So it's a different, you guys have, sure. It's different also. So I think finding that group that is going through the same circumstance as you is very important. So that's why we have a spousal support group where they can talk to each other. And we've actually had a lot of spouses who've become very close friends. And after their husband or wife has passed away, they've, you know, continue to be great friends because they have a bond that no one else understands.
Sure.
But find whatever, you know, if you have a, it's really about just talk about it, get it off your chest, even if you need to see a counselor, and laugh, man. There's so many funny things that happen.
Yes.
You got to find the humor in it.
You definitely have to develop a sense of humor going on this path. You do.
That is absolutely my number one. And I just kind of made that known that if I didn't do that, I would be a bawling mess every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm just that huge tender heart. And so I had to look at it as like, not, oh, this is the disease progressing or this is whatever, because now this has happened. It would just be like, okay, so this happened today. Yeah, that happened. You know, like, I don't know that I had heard my mother-in-law say anything to anybody that was like quite as sassy as she did in there. And she had some ladies that she absolutely loved, and she had some people that she had the opposite strong feeling for. And so she did not like me communicating with certain people. And so she would let me know what she thought about that. And instead of being like bothered by that or being like, oh, okay, I just like that's hilarious. Like, I've never heard you talk like that before. In my head, I would say those things. But one of the things that I learned, and I think you're talking about the reality way versus just
validating it. Yeah.
And validating it, is that sometimes I see it all the time. It's all like, oh, yep, I remember when I was at that phase. You know, when you see somebody else with their family member is, oh, you know, this happened. And then you hear people say, no, mom, it was this. Remember that? Or no, it was this or whatever. Instead of just saying, yeah, you're right. And then moving on with the conversation, because I think sometimes we may lose somebody in our life, you know, or we all have. But if you keep telling somebody, oh, remember they passed away 5 years ago, it's like that person with Alzheimer's could potentially be told for the first time.
Yeah, they're experiencing that grief, right, for the first time. If I could give one word of advice to anyone, it's so simple. Don't use the word remember when you're talking to them, because they don't actually remember. And when you say that, it makes them feel bad and they're trying to remember. I mean, people do it all the time. Remember Sarah, you met her last time? No, they didn't remember me. And I'm like, I'll just kind of have to pacify it and go along with it. And like, just like yesterday, we had a resident who was very upset because she didn't have her walker, wanted to have her walker because she was going to fall and hurt herself. And I don't use a walker. I've never used one. And I didn't say, yes, you do all the time. I'm like, oh, that's okay. And then I just brought it and put it in front of her. And, you know, she got up and used it. But instead of, I wasn't going to argue with her. And then, like, we had a caregiver today. Someone said something to her about a cat. Oh, I don't like cats. I hate them. I'm like, don't. Don't say that. Just kind of go along with it. You know, just go with the flow. The residents don't care. They call Sadie a boy and she's a girl. I just let them do it. I mean, you know, you don't. But it's you. Your natural instinct is you want to remind them what's reality. And,
right,
and that just isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Not that there isn't times when they will have moments of lucidity and they will remember. But
we talked about that too.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, there's always lots of family members from out of town, or people want to know how your loved one's doing. And And sometimes they're not doing that great. Mm-hmm. You tell them, you know, you may want to come for a visit, you know, while they're still remembering certain things. And then they'll come in and they'll visit. And it's like, oh, remember that time we took, you know, the Ford truck out yeah. and did this or that? And they're like, well, she's got all her faculties and all yep. her bells and whistles oh, yeah. working. And it's like, okay, today in that hour, in that moment, and you should just be blessed that you had a wonderful visit.
Absolutely.
But that's not every day.
So true.
Yeah.
And so I think really trusting those people that are there on a constant basis is also.
Well, you have to important. Remember, too, that no one is putting someone in a care facility just to do it. Like, no right. one's dumping anybody off. That's never the case. And so, I know it might, sometimes you might feel like you are, but no one's, so you can't just think that your sister or your brother is just putting someone there just to do it. I mean, I've had, when my grandpa came in, people were, family members accused them of just doing it because we needed to move in. Oh my gosh, I didn't want my grandpa there if I didn't have to, you know, we right. didn't want to do that.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, and I think that it's not easy.
Absolutely not.
And that's also a fallacy if somebody's never gone through it, you know, it's painstaking and
gut-wrenching it yeah, is
and something you really do need that support from. And maybe you might not see eye to eye with another family mm-hmm. member on it, but it's like, say, you know what, I agree to disagree then, or I mean, let's exactly. just use that across the country
right,
right
yeah exactly
good Lord. As soon as I said that, I'm like, we could all drink from that fountain. But it's so important. I mean, there was things that we may not have all agreed upon, but it's like, once the decision was made, that was the family decision. It's like, we support you mm-hmm. and the same back, you know, the family members would be like, okay, I'm listening to what you're saying. And if that's what you think, then okay. And so it was just this, let's try to get through this the best we can together. And like you said, it is a growing process or a learning process. You know, you try something that was an epic fail, try something different. And so for that, I think, you know, that it's a blessing and a curse, but it's like, don't worry about what you're trying.
Absolutely. And, you know, most of the time it's a matter of safety and quality of life for the mm-hmm. person that has the dementia too. You want them to be safe. You know, you can't just turn your back when they're walking off and they disappear for mm-hmm. the day and you don't know where they are. And, you know, they're putting themselves in dangerous situations. You know, it is definitely a matter of safety for that loved one. And maybe not everybody will agree, but maybe not everybody has seen what you've seen. Haven't seen the risks that have been taken or the bad, you know, decisions that have been made or the precarious behavior, that sort of thing. And
it's not going to be easy for you to make that decision, but if you know that person isn't safe, you've got to do it. Like, I have friends who've, I mean, work in this industry and their parents are not doing well and living at home, but they don't want to make that decision for them. And I'm like, but you're telling me they're not safe. Like, what do you, you know, when do you make that decision? You have to, it's not gonna be easy, but you have to do it.
Right. And yeah. to think that you
when safety is an issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's when.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it, if you're capable of staying with that person 24/7,
more power to you. That's great.
Sleep through waking hours and that sort of thing. Great. But.
And there are people that can do that. And yes. I think that they are amazing because I have done this, worked in this business for a very long time. I couldn't do it 24 hours a day. There's
exactly.
no way.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And some people may think, and again, try it then. And if it
yeah,
doesn't
absolutely.
Work out, then you tried it. You know, I mean, it's that.
And there are people that can come into your home and help you.
Right.
And if that works for you, and if you can afford that, or you've got the means to do that, and it was working for you, that's amazing.
Yes.
You know, but.
Yeah. There are many options out there. Mm-hmm. There are.
Yeah, and it just depends on your situation,
mm-hmm.
you know, definitely. But
exactly.
I think that, you know, talking it out and trying to come to some understanding as a group or is nice if it can be done. Sometimes it can't be done. And then really whoever's in the lead, you know, or takes lead, you just kind of have to have their back because
yes.
it's hard. And when you feel like you're out there on an island on your own, and everybody's against you, that's got to be really brutal. So.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest part is when you feel like you're isolated, you're all alone, dealing
Absolutely.
With it by yourself.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And that's when the support comes mm-hmm. in. You know, your friends and support groups and people that are sharing that experience, too. And
yeah. Well, I can't believe it. We're already on another break.
Really?
This is just
all
blowing
right.
by. Okay, so we'll be back, and we'll try to get all the rest of it in here in the last little bit. Be right back. This is Your Cue, sponsored by Premier Insurance.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for listening today. If you've listened to the whole show, hopefully we gave you some tips or pointers and encourage you to, you know, have your loved one just checked or get that baseline, if nothing else, and that may really help you in the future. One of the things that we didn't talk about yet, and I wanted to, is like, Sarah, when people are looking to place their family, like you had said earlier, mm-hmm. you know, you have your facility, but that, you know, it might not be the right fit. I know we talked about you guys have a lot of activities. And so for my mother-in-law, and I think, Carol, for you with your mom, yes. I mean, that is huge. That was everything. So,
well, technically, we're required by the state. Every memory care is required to have a certain amount of scheduled activities for the residents. One thing that we like to do, and everyone's required to do this too, is person-centered care. So you find what the person likes to do. Like when my grandpa was there, he liked to bake bread every Friday. So we made sure we'd let him, when he was able to, with a bread machine, bake bread. But when you go to look at a facility, look at their activities, see what they're doing. Are they going out? Because, you know, we go to the safari once a week. We had a resident who would bake brownies and then deliver them to the volunteers every week. And then they gave him a cheat experience for free because he used to bake them brownies and take them every week when we would go. But, yeah, it's very cool.
That's excellent.
Oh,
yes.
Safari has been very cool to our residents. It's amazing. But, you know, looking at the activities, looking at how, you know, get a feel for the cleanliness and how you feel welcome and what their, you know, their staffing levels are, just but go and ask those questions. Look and, you know, don't worry about it offending me with the questions you ask. Ask whatever, but be comfortable with it and make sure that you, if you're able, you can see what's going on. And don't just worry that someone might be not responding. That's there's all different stages in this disease. So you're going to, when you go to a facility, you're going to see people who are very high functioning. You're going to see people who are total care. Because that's, you know, mm-hmm. what you want them to be able to do.
That's so true. And then allowing them to do as much as they possibly mm-hmm. can at that stage is really important. And Brookdale was really great for my mom. Like, we were just talking about folding clothes and
yes.
cleaning off the tables and feeling like she was, I think at some point she thought she was a volunteer
oh,
there.
Oh, absolutely.
She was living there, but she was a volunteer because she was helping people out and the staff was so appreciative and, you know, would tell her, oh, I don't know what we would do without you. And so mm-hmm. she loved it. You know, she was able to retain some of her self-worth and feel like she was necessary mm-hmm. there, and she was a vital part of the whole situation. And
yeah, we have a resident who says I owe him like 17,000 hours of overtime because he thinks that he works there in our kitchen. In fact, so much of that I got him a food handler's card. He was able to take the tests, which you might think mm-hmm. is weird in memory care, but he could still do that. He just wasn't safe to be out on his own. But,
sure.
You know, that was his job. He was there to do that.
Yeah.
It's important to feel needed. And even if you know, holding a doll, people think that's weird. You're letting someone hold a doll. No, to them, that's not to everyone, but to certain people, that's a baby that they're taking care of and they feel like they have a purpose and they're comforting something,
yes.
someone. So activities are so important.
Yeah, and I think that nurturing, caring mm-hmm. spirit, you know, is probably what they needed or what
Absolutely.
They have.
Yeah.
And
now your mother-in-law will be like, that's a doll, what are you doing? And you have to be like, no, it's okay.
Yeah, but she was also about ready to go on strike with the dishes.
I know.
She'd just be like, no, you're done. I'm ready to take your plate when people were still eating. And she's like, that's it, I'm going to quit. I'm going to go on strike.
That's funny. That's funny.
Absolutely.
And those are those things that you just laugh at. It's like, oh, God bless her, she's quitting her yeah. job. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I remember my mom telling me that Sarah was her boss.
Yeah.
Which is great, because if she tried to leave, then she wouldn't leave because the boss told
yes,
her not to.
Sarah won't let me because she's the boss.
Now, we have to say, this is all usually things that they start doing on their own or that they see around. So
yeah.
she's not getting free labor over here.
Yeah.
I just want to clarify that. It's
yeah.
This was definitely, the folding clothes was very therapeutic for my mother-in-law. And she looked at it completely as... oh, there's a task, and
mm-hmm.
she was needed, and she was filling that need, and it was
well,
wonderful.
But none of us just want to sit in a corner or get up and get dressed and fed and then go to sit back down until
right.
it's time to go to the bathroom again.
True.
We still, our residents, they still have a purpose, you know,
right.
as long as they can. And even if it's something as simple as just, you know, holding, rolling up yarn because of the textures.
Right.
So
yeah. Well, and there's a sense of community
mm-hmm.
too. You know, that they develop friends there and that
oh,
they do
yes,
things
they do.
With and they share interests. And I remember early on
stories.
Yeah, stories, lots of stories, all kinds of stories. But I remember my mom had her little group of friends mm-hmm. that she would, they would walk. They would walk all day and you know, around the loop. Uh-huh. And then they would get together and chat. And my mom's hard of hearing. And the conversations were hilarious because half the stuff she didn't understand. And then she would respond, you know, that wouldn't be quite what the conversation was about. But they were all having fun, and that was all that mattered.
And they might get an argument, and the next day they're best friends again.
Exactly.
So.
There
so
you
true.
Go.
Yeah.
Good
so
points,
true.
Bad points.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, before we get done here, because we just have a minute or two left, is I would love to put out there, in honor of my mother-in-law, to do something special for Brookdale. So if people are interested and want to help out, I asked Sarah and reached out for some of the needs of the residents. And if you could either drop this off at Brookdale in their foyer, there's a little phone there you can ring if you have something to drop off, or at Premier Insurance on Mosier at my office, and then I will get them to Brookdale, whatever you need to do. But skid-proof socks.
Yeah, those are in high demand.
High demand.
And this is the time of year to get them.
Oh, yeah.
Neck pillows to help mm-hmm. their necks when they're sitting in the recliners. Nail polish, emery boards, mm-hmm. and bruts and things for the ladies' hairs. Yeah. And then men, because we don't want to forget the men, they love baseball hats and because you use razors or cologne. So how many residents do you...
We have 60 current? Residents.
Okay, so 60. So if anybody has... their heart into it that they would love to donate to this, it would sure mean a ton to me in honor of my mother-in-law. I would greatly appreciate it.
It
would mean a lot
to mean
Sarah and the
so
staff and the residents. So
and Christmas is coming, and we like to do stockings for them, so we fill our stockings and they all get a stocking. Every single resident gets a stocking to open on Christmas Eve, and then Christmas morning we gather them around the Christmas tree, and every single resident gets a gift to open. Whether they have a family member who can bring one or not, we'll provide it for them. So
well, anything. That's it. We're out of time.
All right.
Already.
Thank
you
so much.
Wow. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Carol, for being
Thank
here
you.
Today. Again, November's National Alzheimer's Awareness Month. Go get your baseline check and take care, everybody. We will see you after Thanksgiving.
That was fast.